Okay. So Arthuretta Martin is our teller for tonight. Arthuretta is the interim president of the National Capital Area Black Storytellers Association. She is a board advisor for Voices from the Earth, a theater and storytelling guild from Davis, West Virginia. She is also a member of the Washington Rebels Jubilee Voices and a teaching artist. She teaches storytelling and public speaking skills to middle school students at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Oakton, Virginia. She is a distinguished Toastmaster, sponsorship chair for the National Speakers Association, and member of the National Storytelling Network and our very own Healing Story Alliance. She obtained Everyone that's joined, if you could please mute your phone. We're already having complications with people not muted. Star 6 to mute your phone, please. She obtained her first healing training and certification as a stress and wellness coach from the Canadian Institute of Stress. She holds a BS in Public Administration from James Madison University, a Master's in Management and Federal Acquisition from the Florida Institute of Technology, and has completed postgraduate work in communication and public policy from George Mason University. She's received training in stage performance, voice, and writing, and has performed throughout the United States and several African nations. After a 30-year career, she now uses her vocal and musical talents to advance the oral tradition of Black storytelling, to edutain, heal, and encourage audiences, young, not so young, and those who need to feel young again. Please join me in welcoming our teller for tonight. And if you could please, everyone that's come on, if you could mute your phone, push star 6 at this time. Arthuretta.
Thank you, Cheryl, for that great introduction. I'd like to begin my presentation tonight with a story. And the story is actually going to be several quotes from noted authors. It is only the story that can continue beyond the war and the warrior. It is the story that outlives the sound of war drums and the exploits of brave fighters. It is the story that saves our progeny from blundering like a blind beggar into the spikes of a cactus fence. The story is our escort. Without it, we are blind. Does the blind man own his escort? No, neither do we the story. Rather, it is the story that owns us. It's the story that directs us. That is taken from Ant Hills of the Savannah. It was written by Chinua Achebe. Next quote I'd like to give you is from Leslie Marmon Silko, and it's from the ceremony that she wrote. I will tell you something about stories. They aren't just entertainment. They are all we have to fight off illness and death. You don't have anything if you don't have the stories. Both of these are talking about Black storytelling. And you may ask, well, what's the difference between Black storytelling and other types of storytelling? And what is this thing about Sankofa and December, and how does all of this wrap together? Well, I welcome everybody who decided to get on this phone at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. I know it's probably, what, 7 or 6 o'clock on the West Coast, if we have any people calling in from the West Coast. And we might even have some folks from overseas calling in, because I have quite a few followers on Facebook from other nations. And I just want to thank everybody for being willing to listen tonight. About a year ago, actually 1 year ago to the day, I was in Ghana, in Accra, and Kumasi and I and seven other sisters from the National Association of Black Storytellers went on what I'd like to call a sojourner. We went on a journey, and that journey was to find out some things. And as I reflect back on where we were last year, and when I reflect back on where I am now and the year of 2016, I thought about the word Sankofa. Sankofa is a Twi word. It's Ghanaian, and it means san, which means to return, ko, which means to go, and fa. Sankofa means to fetch. It means to go back and fetch something. And there are many symbols in the Ashanti and Adinkra cultures that symbolize Sankofa. One is a bird with its feet planted firmly forward, but yet it's turned around facing backward with an egg in its mouth, and its wings are outstretched. And there's one other symbol, and it's a stylized heart. The heart is stylized, meaning that it's embroidered inward double. What does this mean? What does it mean to go back? Well, for me, it means to go back and gain the things that perhaps we've forgotten. Maybe there are things that we haven't really forgotten, but we don't think them front of mind. I hope tonight something that I share about our trip to Ghana will help you to reflect back on some of the things you may have left and you need to go back and get, or some of the people you might need to reestablish yourself with. First, let me tell you a little bit about the eight of us that went to Ghana. We called ourselves the Panifest Eight, and we came from all over the United States. Why did we go to Ghana? It wasn't just to go as a excursion or an educational trip. We went there on invitation. There is an organization called Panifest, and it attempts to bring the diaspora of Africans from around the world to one place in Ghana so that we can talk to each other, get to know each other, to strengthen the ties of the African people in this, through the full diaspora. So the eight of us representing the National Association of Black Storytellers went. Now, who are the National Association of Black Storytellers? Well, we are a group of people throughout the country and now throughout the world that hope to promote, and we do promote, the art of black storytelling. Because black storytelling not only, as I said, entertains, it also includes our history, it includes our heritage, it includes how we educate each other and how we share our mores and our values, and it's how we respect our ancestors. As storytellers, we like to tell stories that will educate and heal. We make sure that our narratives are things that we can use to change hearts and minds and attitudes, not just about others, but about ourselves as we tell. You see, black storytelling is not unlike other forms of storytelling from other cultures. Every culture in the entire planet tells stories, and we have oral traditions. There are folk tales and folklores that everybody knows. But something happened when we started westernizing things, where oral traditions were not respected. When things weren't written down, people were looked at as being uncivilized. So a lot of people began to forget the old ways and focus more on what was written as opposed to what was told and what was memorized from one generation to the other. And that is what black storytelling did, especially with the griot or the wise person from each tribe or organization throughout the continent of Africa. I have news for you. Storytelling does something to the brain. It causes us, when we hear a narrative, to really think about things. We experience them, we see them, and in seeing them, they change something inside of us. Well, cultures from long ago, all cultures knew this, but now we've been sort of confirmed to know it because Harvard and the Department of Defense and a lot of other institutions have spent millions of dollars to figure out what people have known for thousands of years and generations, and that is that storytelling can save lives. So we went to Ghana to see what we could do, not just to share with them what we do in storytelling, but to also hear from them what they do when it comes to maintaining the oral tradition. We had the honor of going to the University of Ghana. That was one of our first stops when we got to Ghana. And at the University of Ghana, there were a panel of professors and historians who talked about what black storytelling was. Some of them were academicians, others were college professors. And we had the honor of our president of NABS being one of the speakers. She was actually the visionary for our trip to Ghana. And she said something to me. Now, it's interesting. I had to go all the way to Ghana to hear her say this, for it to be like manna to my soul. And I've repeated it over and over again, and I want to share it with you. She said that black storytelling is a cultural armor. It's that armor that we need today, meaning African Americans and blacks throughout the diaspora, because that armor is what helped us to deal with all of the things that we experienced when we got to this place called the United States and this place we call the Caribbean or this place we call South America or Central America. We brought the stories across the waters with us. We need those stories now to heal our communities. And it's something about those stories. They help us to identify with who we are. You know, one of the things we did, and I'm jumping ahead, but I wanted to say this. One of the things we did is we went to a storytelling village. And if I try to pronounce it, I'm going to mess it up, but I'm going to attempt it anyway. Ekumsi Atwa was the name of the storytelling village. And about 60 villagers came out. Now, they spoke one language. We spoke another language. But we could still communicate because we communicated in spirit. And we had a translator. And the translator would tell our part of the story, and the translator would then tell their part of the story, and we could truly relate because both of us were telling stories about Anansi the spider. It was really cool. And then we did the other thing. We played the drums and we played the instruments, and of course, that's a universal language. But what was interesting to me was how the rhythms and the movements were so similar, even though we didn't speak the same dialect. We didn't actually have the same culture, but we had the same spirit. And that spirit was working to maintain the oral tradition and the importance of storytelling. So that was one experience we had. We had it by being in the village, but we also experienced storytelling from an academic perspective. And this is another thing that was a takeaway for me. Storytelling was different depending on what part of Ghana you came from. Different techniques, different calls and responses. Just as here in the United States, different people in different regions have different mores and morals and how they communicate, different accents. It's different, but yet it was the same. And it's the commonality where we reach each other and we come together. And that was one of the things I learned and I received when I went to the university. Another thing that we experienced was the actual PanaFest event. It was came out in all of their finery and gold and waiting people, and it just seemed like they just kept coming and coming and coming. You're thinking, where are all these people coming from? Well, it was amazing. This was one of the most precious moments to me of the trip, because not only did they come to talk to each other and share and talk about the whole needs of the diaspora of Africans, but they came to welcome us, those of us who had left and came back to the continent. We had a whole ceremony on welcoming us back. It was a very precious moment, and we got plenty of pictures to commemorate those moments. It was special. We had other events that were, I'm not going to say as exciting and special, but definitely touching. And that's those moments when we went to the slave-holding castles. Cape Coast has one of the largest buildings still left on the continent that was a slave-holding castle. We had a candlelight visual at that location. It was very solemn, because when you walk inside there, you can still smell the blood. You can still see the scratches on the wall. You can still feel the heaviness and the pain. And this building is not small. This building is huge. And just like most slave castles that are on the west coast of Africa, the church was a big part of the slave castle. It was a sanctuary that was sitting on the top of it. So the dissonance, the cognitive dissonance that we all experience by being there is nothing that you will ever shake. It becomes a story in and of itself. How do you psychologically process the atrocities that happened in that slave castle? But yet, we were able to return. We were able to experience, and there was nothing like it. Now, a couple of other things that we did on our trip was, one sister, Mama Edie, had the privilege of going to work with some of the orphanages in Ghana. We stayed at, I think, one of the most beautiful places in Ghana, One Africa. The woman, Imacus, that runs One Africa is just amazing. She became, we went there as Panifest 8 and left as Panifest 9, because she became like our mother. She is an American that decided to move to Ghana, and she has a compound, and it sits right on the ocean. So all night long we could hear the ocean just hitting the rocks, and the calmness and the breeze, and just sitting there with such, and living there was like in the phone, and you didn't have no television, of course, and you didn't have hot running water, but it didn't even matter, because there was so much love and there was so much excitement. And the fact that the eight of us went through this, I think we have a bond that will not be broken, because we experienced something that is priceless. We experienced a sisterhood that bound us together for the rest of our life. Now, there were a handful of us that not only experienced Accra and Ghana and Cape Coast, some of us went on and went to Kumasi. Now, Kumasi is the seat of where the Accra, Ashanti people and the Ashanti Nation reside. And we had the honor of going to actually see kente cloth being made. Now, one thing that I'd like to emphasize is when it comes to originality and authenticity, that was another one of my takeaways, because here in the States, you can get a lot of clothing and things that people will tell you were made in Africa. They were not made in Africa the way this kente cloth is being made, because we saw them actually weave hand using machines with their feet, and just the thread and the spinning of the yarn, and many of us bought many of the beautiful pieces that they made, but we gained a whole different level of respect for the craftsmanship that goes into creating kente cloth, because it's something that is passed down from one generation to the next. It's a matter of respect. It's a matter of honor to be able to craft kente cloth. Another thing that I gained a whole nother level of respect for were the Adinka symbols. We see the different symbols that are placed on many different objects that we buy here in the States, but we don't really understand what goes into creating those symbols when it's not mass produced. It's produced in Kumasi with ink that comes from bark, and the methodology in which they create the ink and create the symbols is something very special that is passed from one generation to the next. And the holder of the knowledge passes it on to the next generation. So this is this one practice of creating the Adinka symbols to place on cloth, to then create and pass it on throughout the country and really throughout the world when they sell it, is nothing that is simple. And I gained a whole nother level of respect for that. So when I want to think about going back and fetching, I decided that this talk, even though the last time I gave it was all of the wonderful things we experienced in Ghana, this is the month of December, and every month of December, we sort of reflect on what we did. We come with family and friends around the holidays, and then we begin anew in January. This year, for me, going and reflecting back means more because of my experience that I had in Ghana last year. Because not only do I look back and fetch. That means I go back and grab hold of knowledge, people, situations that are of value that I can bring forward. So what are some of those things that I believe that I can learn from not only my trip but from the past year? I gained a whole different respect for community. We can try to do a lot of things as an individual, but there is nothing like the power of community when people come together for a common good and for a common goal. Right now, we are witnessing that in our lifetime, and our children's children's children will be talking about what's going on in South Dakota right now, where community decided that whatever their differences were, they're going to come together to fight and protect ancestral burial ground and water. Nothing more precious. That's another thing that I learned from my trip to Ghana, respect for elders and ancestors. That's another thing that, I don't know, somewhere along the line, we don't hold the same reverence for elders and ancestors as we used to. That is something we as people need to go back and fetch, because there's a lot in what they have said, both orally and also in writing, that we can gain tremendous wisdom from. And the last thing that I gained from my trip to Ghana is the importance of nurturing our children. As I said, Mama Edie went to visit orphanages. But that orphanage, some of those children actually came to visit us. And I took video of them dancing, and I tell you, if I tried to move like that, I would probably knock something out. Something would be out of place, because those children could move. And they gave their whole heart and soul to not just entertaining us, but telling us story through dance. They told us many stories through the way that they sang, the songs they sang, but also the way that they moved. And that's all part of Black storytelling. So as I begin to wrap up this little part of my experience from Ghana and what I learned, I want to sort of close this out with a little quote for you. The symbol of Sankofa, it does mean go back and fetch it. It not only means go back and fetch it, but it means to look for knowledge and information. And when you gain that knowledge and information, look at how it can impact what you are doing yourself. It's a critical analysis piece, and it's done by very intelligent people, whether they can write English, French, or Portuguese, or whether they can only tell it in their own tongue. It is still of value, and we need to respect that. And the symbol of the bird with its feet firmly planted and reaching back, and also the symbol of the heart, which means that I believe that little egg that is in the mouth of the Sankofa bird is knowledge, it's youth, it's wisdom, it's whatever we need to help us move forward. And that's what we need to go back and fetch. And that concludes my portion of this presentation, and I want to open it up at this time, Cheryl, for anybody that has any questions or comments.
I think, Cheryl, you all. I muted myself and then unmuted myself. Great. Thank you so much for your share. And, yeah, at this time, we would like to open it up for anyone who might have questions, feedback, comments, points of discussion, if you would just unmute yourself, and we'd love to hear from someone first.
This is Joe Doolittle, and can you just tell us again how many people were in your trip and kind of what may have happened after you got back with some of your own stories about this experience? I'm curious about kind of the adaptation of some of your learning back home.
Okay. There were eight of us that went to tell stories, that participated in PanaFest. There were another four of us, so there were a total of about 12 or 13 of us that went on the trip to Ghana. But there were eight of us that actually performed. And your second question is, how has it changed me as a teller? It has caused me to look at the stories that I tell differently, to try to understand the context in which they were created. And it has also caused me, which is something I did not do before, is to write my own folk tales and my own folk tales with some of the same imagery that I learned in Ghana. I gained a whole different respect for the need to tell stories and folk tales and mores from my experience in Ghana.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hello. I have a question about the people that you met at the University of Ghana. Were these people that were resident at the university, or did they just come specifically for that meeting?
They were residents, they were professors, they were students, they were all in the academic field that were at the University of Ghana. There were none that just came. Most were either involved in PanaFest or were involved with the university from an academic perspective. In Ghana, like here, they have a track, an academic track in storytelling.
Ah. Okay, I'm interested in going to Ghana next year and looking for stories, specifically with the U. And I was wondering if there were people I could talk to at the university.
Well, when we get off this call, you can email me. I think my information, my website is on the page. But you, or else you can reach me through NSN. And
okay.
I can sort of help to connect you with the University of Ghana and the collection of stories. There's a lot of different ways you can collect stories. Yeah. But, you know, that reminds me of something. There was one thing that I did learn that I didn't mention before. When we tell our story, and this is the thing that I learned in the Storytelling Village, there's a lot of different ways you can tell a story. The story can be told as entertainment. It can be told as information. But the difference that I've learned, and this is something that was cemented in me from my trip to Ghana, is when it is told from an experience, it's a whole different piece. When you come to the table telling a story from your experience, can't nobody tell your story like you can tell your story.
Mm-hmm.
So when you begin to do your research, those stories that resonate with you and your experiences are the best ones to tell.
Okay.
Because then
Thank
they become,
you.
When you retell them, they're more than just telling a story. They're telling your story.
Mm-hmm. Another question.
Yes.
Greetings, Authoretta. Can you hear me? It's Tahira.
Oh, hello, Tahira. Tahira, she's one of the sisters that was with me on the trip.
Yes, yes. I just wanted to say peace and balance to you. You represented in your presentation offering just a vivid picture. I feel like I'm reliving it. Today, this is the day we returned. We were making our way back on
yes.
December 14th.
Yes.
But I also want to say in terms of what the question about what have we done since we returned and what we learned and how it affected us, you've heard me say this many times, but the trip, the journey, the pilgrimage we made changed everything about my life, changed every cell of my body. I had a physical healing from some ailments when I was there. I had a spiritual redemption. I had a healing of my family. So many extraordinary things happened to me. And I am different in the way that I approach my storytelling now. I'm more committed to making sure everything that I do honors and reveres those who came before me, that I was part of that before. But now it's ever so more important. I'm much more deliberate in what I tell and clear about the reasons why I tell it.
Yes.
So thank you, sister. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for chiming in and sharing. Now, I have a question for you, Tahira.
Sure.
You talked about how you are different. Now, I entitled this presentation, Sankofa, Going Back and Fetching. What do you feel that you, other than all the experiences and the healing and the differences in how you tell, what do you feel that you can go, you went back and fetch, that you grabbed hold of and you're bringing forward?
It was so much.
Before you answer the question, can everyone make sure that your phones are muted? Everyone else, could you make sure that your phones are muted? Thank you.
Okay, there's one person whose phone is not muted.
Yeah.
It is now. Okay.
Okay. So what did I go
back? Heidi, did you have it?
No, it's
someone,
no.
They're talking, so they probably
there's
didn't
someone
see.
Someone's phone is not muted.
Yeah, I don't know. You can actually mute
star
them.
Star 6. So, you would need to push star 6 to mute your phone, please.
Yeah.
Okay, so what did I go back and fetch? It was a lot. The most profound thing is a direct communication, a clear communication with my those who I ascend from personally, my relatives, and those from long ago. That I believe there's a space between the people, us and our human experience and those in the spirit world. There's a space. It feels like there's a space when I'm here in the States. When we were in Ghana, there was no space. It was as thin as a butterfly wing. There was no space at all. There was no space. And having that experience, bringing that experience back, every moment I'm reminded of that. I got to work a little harder here to close that gap and to close that space so that I am in direct communication and feel that and move with intention around that connection. But that's what I went back and fetched. I already knew that. I didn't know that. But knowing it and experiencing it and having it experienced and others witness it so you know it was real was profound. So that's why I went back and fetched, that the space between our human experience and those in the spirit world, there really is no space at all.
Thank you so much. Are there other questions for Arthuretta?
Yes, this is Jim. Thank you very, very much. You mentioned that you had a story that kind of migrated its way from Ghana over here and that it was recognizable by people on both sides. Did I get that part right?
You got that right. There
are
certain symbols in African-American tradition that came across the waters. Well, not just African-American. They're in the Caribbean, and they're also in South America. And that was Anansi the spider or Brer Rabbit. They're all tricksters. We like to call them the tricksters. And we heard those stories or versions of those stories in Ghana in the storytelling village.
Right. So my interest is, I have an interest in the ways that stories migrate from Judaism to Islam, which there's a lot of that that goes on too. And it's very instructive to see how they change from from the beginning to their new kind of manifestation. And can you speak anything about, what you might have learned from the differences of the stories as the way they're told at the source and the way they're told over here?
Yeah, I can speak to that. First of all, we don't see them as a line like they were in the beginning and then they migrated to something else. Where there's no line. It's a circle. It's a circle. So there's no first and there's no end, and we tell. And we all interpret what it is differently, but it still gets us to the same source. So we approach storytelling differently than, as you say, Judaism to Islam, because my first thought when you said that was that it could also be from Islam to Judaism. It's a circle. So that is one of the things that I learned, and is that it's not that we, things changed and shifted. It's that it's a continuum, and we learn and grow and experience together.
Okay. Yeah, you stated it much more eloquently than I could. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions?
Who's next? Who'd like to ask another question?
This is Joe Doolittle again, and I'm wondering if, in your experience, you've had or been involved in any of a Sankofa that involved black and whites traveling together to go back and fetch it. We've had one experience in our denomination where I'm in the Reformed Church, and our Divinity School in New Brunswick organized a trip to Montgomery and matched black and white lay leaders and pastors, and they took a bus ride, and they've got a journal about it, and it was remarkable in some of the things we should know that we learned again and some shared learning. And I'm looking for other applications of Sankofa as a method in kind of building community, particularly across racial lines. Have you done anything with that?
You just put it out.
There's a background voice. Whoever is talking, if you could mute your phone, I'd appreciate it.
I'm sorry, this is Joe again. I didn't realize I was getting lost.
Okay. No. I got the question, and that's using the go back and fetch it or Sankofa to heal. At this juncture, NABS, to my knowledge, is focused on healing the African Americans and the rest of us through the diaspora of the trauma that we are still dealing with. And
okay.
we are being re-traumatized on a daily basis. So we're focused on our stories helping us deal with our trauma and on healing our communities so that we're in a position where we can do some trance. You know, we can always share stories. Sharing stories is one thing. And I have, Ghana is not my personal first trip to Africa. I have taken other trips, and they have been with people that are other than just African Americans. But this particular experience was for the healing or to gain an understanding of where we as Africans throughout the diaspora need to identify our commonalities to deal with the issues within us. But I have, in answer to your question, done that, and it's a whole different experience where we're trying to address both sides, those who may be the ancestors of those who did the traumatizing and those who experienced the trauma. I've done that, but it's a whole different experience. It's a whole different approach.
Okay. I certainly heard that in your presentation. I was just looking for some applications. And it's a remarkable story you tell. I mean, I think it was a pretty great thing you folks did. So thank you for that. Thank you for the story.
You're welcome.
I wondered if anyone is on from the Healing Story Alliance. I believe that we are trying to revitalize maybe a social justice arm of Healing Story Alliance. Allison, Alyssa, Lanny Peterson, is there anyone on that might be able to talk to that?
This is Allison.
Hello, Allison.
Hi. Yeah, we're excited that we're hoping to move forward on that, and we can do it in many ways. One of the ways is Gay Sutton in New Zealand and Mike Seliger, I don't know if Mike's on the call, are going to sift through the information of resources that people have sent to us in the past 2 years so that we can start doing a web page. And we'd also like to hear some ideas about ways we can encourage people to have local gatherings and celebrations, conferences, festivals about social justice and storytelling. We're not sure yet how this will evolve, but, you know, it starts with an idea and us talking, and then we can move forward.
Thank you, Allison. Thank you. Anyone else want to speak to that? I thought I heard a couple of chimes
same
time.
This is Mama Edie. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh,
okay.
Mama Edie is another sister that went with us on the trip to Ghana.
Yeah, peace and blessings, and thank you so much, Arthuretta, for representing us so well in your presentation. It was really wonderful. I had been a part of the Healing Story Alliance with NSN for a number of years and would like to get reconnected with that, but in that context, I wanted to speak to the gentleman who's asking about the healing aspects and how we can use some of these experiences. And just a couple of things, and I'll try to be brief. You know, that's hard for me sometimes. But a couple of quick things is that when I went to Ghana this time, it was my fourth time there. And I remember when I went back the second time, I had to decide whether or not I was going to travel again to the dungeons, to the slave dungeons, with the other storytellers. That was a NABS had gone together of that year. Or if I was going to pass up that experience and just go hang out at the beach or go shopping. And it was as though I got a voice that said, "You're not finished. It's a necessary pain." And so here I am on the bus on the way to the shore trying to make this decision as to whether or not I'm going to put myself through that again. And I'm thinking, well, okay, I'll be obedient to the spirit speaking within me. And maybe because I've already done it one time, maybe it'll be easier this time because it was so painful the first time. But I have to tell you that the second time was more painful than the first. And when I went back this time with the sisters from the Panifest 8, it was even more profound than the last time. And so each experience was different, but one of the things that I learned was the importance of sometimes embracing the pain in order for us to move through to our healing space. I had a chance to also, I was in the first march 50 years ago with Dr. King here in Chicago against the policy of redlining, where African Americans and Latinos and Asians were kept out of certain neighborhoods. And so at 15 years old, I was in that march. Well, we had another commemoration of that march back in August, I think it was. And I went back to that same community that threw stones at us and spat at us and cursed us for the purpose of healing, because I realized that we had made some advancement. So what I wanted to leave with you now, and what I also gained from going back to Ghana again, one of my takeaways, was sometimes the necessity of embracing the pain, not running away from it, but just confronting it, embracing it, and moving through it to another space of healing.
All right. Thank you, Mama
Edie. Mama Edie, that is so profound. When you were talking, it reminded me of the last bath. There
yes.
was, I can't remember if you were with us then, but there is a place in Ghana where people, before they were put on the ships, after they, because people were brought from across the continent, even though a lot of folk would like to believe that they only came from West Africa, they were actually brought from across the continent. And there is a place where they could called it the last bath, because the water was clear and they could pull shea butter down so that they could clean the people and shine them up with shea butter to make them look well, because they did the trading at the castle. And one of the most healing things that I did, and Queen took a picture of this, is I actually immersed my feet and my legs in the water. I immersed myself in the water, and it was a form of healing. And that was all part of embracing the pain so that you could move on from it. And it's healing. It's just going to be part of our journey when we're talking about these generations of trauma.
Ashe. You know, if I could, since I've got a spot on here, I wanted to mention there was someone else on, a gentleman, Jim, I think, who was talking about the ways in which stories had changed as they left the continent and traveled to other places. And you had made... Arthur read a good examples of the Anansi stories and talked about how they changed. And one specific and graphic example of how they changed is that when people from outside of a culture experience dynamics or dimensions of another culture that is foreign to them, sometimes, often, they don't understand what it is that they're viewing, observing, or experiencing. And yet they place themselves in positions of authority to then write about it and tell other people about it. And then, therefore, the world becomes informed with inaccurate information. And so what had happened was that, or as we colloquially say sometimes, what had happened was, was that in some cases, the Anansi stories, for example, when the Anansi stories got to the Caribbean islands, because people were trying to write down the stories and they weren't quite sure how to spell the names, they ended up writing spellings of words that they thought they heard. And so Anansi became Anansi. Sometimes people would not pronounce it Anansi. They'd look at it A-N-A-N-S-E, and to their American ear, English-speaking ear, it was Anansi. Well, then people began to think that they were saying, well, what are they saying? A Nancy? Oh, they must be saying Aunt Nancy. So somehow this spider from Ghana, who was actually a male in the original stories, ended up becoming Aunt Nancy, a female, in other stories as they evolved. So sometimes those changes can actually give a total shift from what the original intention had been. So that's simply one example. And even the song that's often sung, Kumbaya, a lot of people just think it's a nice little feel-good song, Kumbaya, and actually it's a Creolized version of a statement. It's a mournful statement of the enslaved Africans who were saying, Kumbaya, Kumbaya, my Lord, come by here, my Lord, save us, deliver us from this misery. They weren't just singing Kumbaya, let's, you know, all get together and be friends. They were singing, it was a prayer, Kumbaya, Kumbaya, come by here, my Lord.
That's a good word. That's a good lesson, Mama Edie. Thank you so much. Just because of time, I just want to announce really quickly that, and then we'll have a little bit more time for maybe a final question, but really quickly want to announce for everyone that we do have two teleconferences in January. On January 4th, we'll have Laura Sims in Praise of Light, and on January 25th, we'll have Nora Dooley leading a swap of stories of solidarity and resistance right after the inauguration. Arthuretta, you had mentioned one time that you wanted to somehow involve maybe some of the other sisters who traveled with you, didn't know if you wanted to give them an opportunity to say a word.
They already did. Mama Edie did, and Tahira did.
Okay. Was there anyone else on? Was Gwen?
Well, I'm on. I'm Mary Grant from Southfield, Michigan.
Oh, Mary, how are you?
And I've seen the healing of storytellers at the NSN, and I really didn't really I hadn't figured it out, but I think I understand a little better now. But just having listened to you and the healing of having gone to the PanFest. Because I thought I had experienced the PanFest before, but I think that your experience was a great experience of connecting the African culture to the American experience. I mean, to the African American. I think that because I understand it better now, having listened to you, I was just wondering what am I going to get from this. But I got a great lot more than I thought I was going
to
get, and I'm really glad that you did this. Because I got some information. So I will consider being part of that healing part of the NSN because I couldn't figure out, well, why would they have a section that's part of the NSN and then that's the healing part, and I never really went to their stories. But I'll be at the conference this year, certainly.
Wonderful.
And I will go to the storytelling experience of the healing at the, you know, I don't know. That's my two cents.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm glad I was on this call. Cause it really
I'm glad.
Was, it was a good experience.
Great.
Thank
good.
You.
Mm-hmm. Arthur
Redmond.
Did
you want
Diane
to wrap
Macklin.
Up?
Who is this?
Diane Macklin.
Hello, Diane. How are you?
Very good. I didn't want to miss hearing you because when folks were talking about this at NAB, at National Social Life Storytellers Conference, I couldn't go to that event. And I really wanted to hear about what you all experienced because I know that I went to Senegal and it was a transformative way of how I lived in the world too, partly because I met some of the most generous people I've ever met and in the world, and I've traveled to quite a few countries. And the other thing that I appreciate about you is that you really have a passion for spreading good news, which is what you did tonight. And I thank you for that. I thank you for seeing that there is a need for the tradition to be a part of D.C. And it is a part of D.C. and that you're doing that.
And I also wanted to pass along something that someone from Ghana told me about that egg. They said the egg is the future.
Yes.
And if you want to have a positive future, you have to look back at the past.
Yes.
That the future, it's children, it's the next generation, and you cannot have that without knowing the past. And I thought that was very profound when that friend shared that with me. And I appreciate when our brothers and sisters from the continent, you know, pass along information that sometimes we can only get in books or things like that, or if we go, we can get it there, but that we can't get that real true feeling like we can get it from our brothers and sisters from the continent.
Yes, that's the energy. It's deeper than the words.
Okay, Osreda, I don't know if you can hear me. This is Venora.
Hello, Venora. Venora was on the trip with us as well.
And thank you for sharing and representing us, as Mama Edie and Tahira have already stated. And thank you so much for bringing back some of those things, the memories that we shared. I do want to mention also, during the when we were at the university, one of the things that was mentioned is the necessity of passing on the stories, and how sometimes when the stories are not passed on because of the generations, part of the story is lost. And so it's important for us to continue to pass on the stories.
Yes.
Sister Venora, thank you very much. I think it's fitting that we might end with you. We like to end these exactly on time, and it is 9:59. Allison, am I right? Are we ending it at the top of the hour?
Hi, had to get back on. It's totally up to Arthuretta and everyone else. We like to let people know that we don't expect them to stay past that time. But if you feel like you want to continue talking, it's up to you and Cheryl, or Cheryl and Arthuretta.
Let's do it, Arthuretta. It sounds like people still might have some more to say. Are you game, Arthuretta?
Well, I am. I just want to give all respect to the executive director of the National Association of Black Storytellers, Venora, who was on that trip with us and who just shared with us. So I did want to thank her for chiming in.
Bless you.
Thank you, Venora. Is Gwen on?
She may have come off because I heard a lot of people coming off because we are at the top of the hour. And
right, because she had planned to be on.
Right.
Okay.
So we really can wrap it up now. I would like to end by saying that, yes, I am the interim president, and I'm really proud of the work that we are doing in D.C. to set up a national capital area that includes the D.C. metro area Black Storytelling Group Association, and our vision will mirror that of the National Association of Black Storytellers. But one thing I do want to say, this piece about social justice and storytelling, I hear what those in the Healing Story Alliance said, and I'm going to make sure that as we bring this up and we stand this organization up, we make sure we include a component of social justice storytelling in it. That is very important, that we do the healing work for the descendants of the Africans brought here, but we also make sure that we address issues that could bring people together and there be an understanding, so that we can then come together to address issues that are common to us all. So I thank you for bringing that to my attention.
Great. Well, wonderful job. Thank you so much. I think you blessed and healed us all tonight. Thank you for your sharing. Thank you for your story. And thank you, everyone, for being with us tonight.
All right. Thank you, Cheryl.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Arthuretta.
Okay, good night.
Thank you, Cheryl.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Good night.
Yes.